Welcome to a deep dive into the fascinating world of reproductive physiology. We're going way beyond the basic birds and the bees here.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to uncover some intricate connections and surprising details you might have never even considered before.
Absolutely.
So think of this as your crash course.
Yeah.
Using this awesome Queen's University Physiology Guide as our roadmap.
It's a great guide.
It is.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? We often think of reproduction as, you know, essential for survival.
Right.
But it's not actually for an individual.
Right.
It's crucial for the continuation of the species, but not for keeping you alive.
Yeah, that's so true.
It's kind of a paradox.
Totally. It's like you don't need to reproduce to live.
Right.
But without reproduction, there wouldn't be any you to begin with.
Exactly.
And, you know, when you look closer, it's not just about one thing.
Yeah.
We're talking hormones, organs,
yeah,
all working together in a way that's seriously mind-blowing.
Exactly. And there are so many common misconceptions.
Oh, I bet.
For instance, did you know that women are born with all the eggs they'll ever have?
Really?
Men constantly produce sperm.
Right.
But women have a finite supply from the very beginning.
That's wild. I always pictured it as like both systems just constantly creating gametes.
It's a common misconception.
Yeah. Okay, so we have these two very different systems, but they both have the same goal, to create new life.
Exactly.
But how do we even get to having separate male and female systems in the first place?
Right.
We all start as embryos.
Right, and it's like this incredible mystery unfolding. Mm. It all starts with chromosomes at conception.
Okay.
If you have XX, you're on the path to developing as female XY, and it's the male path.
So genes are the first clue.
Yeah.
But it can't be that simple, can it?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
It's a cascade of events.
Right.
Those genes determine whether the gonads develop into testes or ovaries.
Mm-hmm.
But then hormones take over guiding everything.
Okay.
And testosterone is the big one for male development.
Testosterone. Huh. So even though female embryos have estrogen, it's really the presence or absence of testosterone that makes a difference.
Exactly. It's like a switch flipping development in one direction or the other.
Wow.
And you know what's really cool?
Right.
Even the reproductive tract starts with two sets of precursors.
Okay.
Called the Wolfian and Mullerian ducts.
Hmm.
They're both there in the early embryo.
Hold on. Two sets. What happens to the one that doesn't get used?
It actually degrades.
Oh, wow.
Hormones are the signals telling the body which system to develop,
right,
and which one to essentially discard.
So fascinating.
It's amazing how these tiny chemical messengers shape us.
Totally. Okay, so let's zoom in on the male system for a sec.
Okay.
We all know the testes are the sperm factories.
Mm-hmm.
But why are they outside the body? Seems like a vulnerable spot, right?
Well, there's a really important reason for that.
Okay.
Sperm are super sensitive to temperature.
Damn.
They need to be a few degrees cooler than our core body temperature to develop properly.
Oh.
So the scrotum acts as a natural cooling system.
It's all about temperature control.
Exactly.
But how does sperm production actually work?
Right.
Millions of tiny sperm being created all the time.
Yeah.
That's got to be complex.
It is. It's called spermatogenesis.
Okay.
And it happens inside those winding seminiferous tubules in the testes.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of it like a cellular assembly line with different stations.
Okay, break it down for me. What are the steps on this assembly line?
Well, first you have mitotic proliferation.
Okay.
Which is essentially just cells dividing to make more copies.
Okay.
Then comes meiosis, where the chromosome number gets cut in half,
right,
resulting in those haploid sperm cells.
Okay.
And lastly, there's packaging, where the sperm are stripped down to the essentials.
Mm-hmm.
The head with DNA, a midpiece packed with mitochondria for energy, and of course the tail for swimming.
So it's like they're getting a total makeover, streamlined and ready to race.
Exactly.
But speaking of sperm production, we can't forget about testosterone. Everyone thinks it's just about muscles and masculinity.
Yeah.
But there's got to be more to it, right?
There's way more to it.
Okay.
Testosterone is involved in everything from prenatal development to bone growth.
Wow.
It's essential for maintaining the reproductive tract libido and, as you said, driving sperm production.
Right.
It's multitasking on a whole other level.
And I was reading about these Sertoli cells. They sound pretty important, too.
They are.
They're like the support staff for sperm, right?
That's a great way to put it.
Okay.
They're kind of like nurse cells hanging out within the seminiferous tubules.
Okay.
They nourish the developing sperm,
mm-hmm,
form a protective barrier around them, and even help regulate the whole process.
It's like a whole microscopic world in there.
It is.
So we've got these cells dividing, getting streamlined, being nurtured.
Yeah.
But what controls this whole process? Hormones are calling the shots right.
Absolutely. It starts with the hypothalamus in the brain,
okay,
which releases a hormone called GnRH. That signals the pituitary gland to release LH and FSH.
Right.
These hormones then act on the testes, stimulating testosterone production and sperm development.
Okay, I'm following so far, but how does the body make sure it doesn't go overboard with all these hormones and sperm?
That's where the feedback loop comes in.
Okay.
Testosterone and another hormone called inhibin act like messengers, signaling back to the hypothalamus and pituitary,
okay,
to adjust the release of GnRH, LH, and FSH.
So it's like a constant conversation happening, making sure everything stays in balance.
Exactly. It's like a thermostat making fine adjustments to maintain the perfect temperature for sperm production.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've got these sperm all ready to go.
Yep.
But their journey isn't over yet, is it? Mm-hmm. What happens next?
Not even close. Sperm have a long road ahead.
Oh, really?
They have to travel through the male reproductive tract.
Okay.
Starting in the epididymis, that's where they mature and gain the ability to swim.
Mm-hmm.
Then they move into the ductus deferens, which is like the highway to the outside world.
So it's not just a quick swim out.
Nope.
There are multiple stops along the way.
There are. And as they're traveling, they pick up fluids from these accessory glands.
Okay.
You've got the seminal vesicles, the prostate, and the bulbourethral glands.
Right.
Each adding something crucial to the mix.
Okay. This is where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
What do those glands do?
Well, the seminal vesicles are all about providing energy.
Okay.
They contribute fructose, which is basically sugar,
uh-huh,
to fuel those swimming sperm. They also add prostaglandins, which can trigger muscle contractions to help move things along.
It's like giving those swimmers a power boost and a push in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly.
What about the prostate? I know it's important, but
yeah,
not exactly sure why.
The prostate is key for making sure sperm can actually survive in the female reproductive tract.
Okay.
It secretes an alkaline fluid that neutralizes the acidity of the vagina.
Okay.
It's like creating a protective bubble for the sperm to travel in.
So it's not just about getting the sperm there. It's about making sure they can thrive once they arrive.
Right.
And I'm really curious about those bulbourethral glands.
Yeah.
What's their role in all this?
These guys are all about lubrication.
Okay.
They secrete a clear fluid during sexual arousal, which helps the sperm move smoothly through the urethra.
Mm-hmm.
They're often overlooked, but they're pretty important for making sure everything flows literally.
Okay, so we've got these sperm fueled up, protected and lubricated, ready to head out on their mission.
Yep.
Now let's switch gears and talk about the female side of the equation.
Okay.
We know a woman is born with all her eggs.
Right.
But how does egg development work?
Yeah.
It's a much different story than sperm production.
Yeah, it's totally different.
Okay.
It's called eugenesis. And it's a much more selective and, dare I say, patient process.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this patient process.
Well, imagine this. A female fetus already has millions of primary oocytes by the fifth month of gestation.
Wow.
Each oocyte is nestled inside a tiny follicle.
Okay, but here's the kicker. They're paused in development.
Oh, wow.
They just hang out there waiting until puberty kicks in.
So they're in a holding pattern for years.
Pretty much.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. What happens when puberty finally starts?
Then the real competition begins.
Oh.
From puberty onward, a small group of those follicles start to develop each month.
Okay.
They're basically competing for resources.
Wow.
And only one follicle usually becomes dominant.
Mm-hmm.
That dominant follicle grows larger,
okay,
stockpiles nutrients, and prepares for ovulation.
Right.
And while all this is happening, the primary oocyte inside is finally completing its first meiotic division.
So it's like a biological reality show. Only one egg gets the final rose.
You got it.
What happens to the other follicles that don't make it?
They sadly fade away.
Oh.
And you know, you might be surprised to learn just how much bigger an egg is compared to a sperm.
I can imagine.
That size difference reflects all the resources the egg needs to support early embryonic development.
It's like a self-contained world ready to nourish a potential embryo.
That makes sense. The egg is bringing so much to the table, literally.
Yeah.
So we've got this one egg prepped and ready.
Mm-hmm.
But how does the body know when it's time to release it?
That's where the ovarian cycle comes in.
Okay.
Think of it as a carefully choreographed hormonal dance with two main acts,
uh-huh,
the follicular phase and the luteal phase.
Okay.
Each one lasts about 2 weeks.
So the follicular phase is about getting that egg ready.
Right.
What about the luteal phase?
That phase is all about preparing the uterus for a potential pregnancy. It's like setting the stage for a very important guest.
Got it. So let's break down the follicular phase first.
Okay.
What's happening with hormones during that time?
It's a delicate balance.
Oh, okay.
FSH and LH from the pituitary gland stimulate the growth of those follicles.
Mm-hmm.
As they mature, they start producing estrogen, which actually helps boost their own growth even more.
So estrogen is like a positive reinforcement loop.
Exactly. But it gets even more interesting. As estrogen levels rise, they eventually trigger this massive surge in LH release from the pituitary gland. That's the infamous LH surge.
I've heard of that. Doesn't that cause ovulation?
It does. The LH surge is what causes the mature follicle to burst open, releasing the egg into the fallopian tube. It's like the climax of the follicular phase.
Wow, that's dramatic.
Yeah.
So the egg is on its way, what's happening during the luteal phase.
After ovulation, the remnants of that burst follicle transform into something called the corpus luteum.
Okay.
It's a temporary gland that starts pumping out progesterone.
Progesterone, isn't that the hormone that supports pregnancy?
It is. Progesterone is key for thickening the uterine lining.
Right.
Making it a cozy and welcoming place for a potential embryo to implant.
Yeah.
It also suppresses uterine contractions to create a stable environment.
So it's all about prepping for a possible pregnancy. But what happens if the egg doesn't get fertilized?
Then the corpus luteum breaks down, progesterone levels drop, and the uterine lining sheds. That's what we know as menstruation. It's the body's way of hitting the reset button and starting a new cycle.
It's like the end of one chapter and the beginning of a new one. But while all this is going on in the ovaries.
Yeah.
There's a parallel story happening in the uterus.
Yeah, absolutely. The uterine cycle is perfectly synced with the ovarian cycle. Think of it as two dancers moving in perfect harmony.
Wow.
The uterine cycle has three phases.
Okay.
The menstrual phase, the proliferative phase, and the secretory phase.
Okay, so three phases. Walk me through those.
The menstrual phase happens when the uterine lining is shed, which aligns with the end of the luteal phase and the beginning of the follicular phase in the ovaries.
Okay.
Then during the proliferative phase, which lines up with the later follicular phase, estrogen stimulates the regrowth of the endometrium.
So it's like the endometrium is being rebuilt thicker and ready for action.
Yeah.
Exactly. And finally, the secretory phase happens during the luteal phase. Progesterone from that corpus luteum transforms the thickened endometrium into a nutrient-rich environment, perfectly timed for a possible embryo to implant.
Wow.
It's all about precise timing and coordination.
It's amazing how these two systems are so interconnected. What happens if they get out of sync?
That's when you can have problems like endometriosis, where uterine tissue grows outside the uterus.
Right.
It can cause pain, infertility, and other issues. It really shows how important that synchronized dance is for reproductive health.
Speaking of synchronized dance, let's talk about what happens when sperm actually meets egg.
Okay.
What are the chances of one tiny sperm finding that one egg?
It's actually more of an obstacle course than a chance encounter.
Oh.
Sperm deposited in the vagina face a long journey.
Oh, yeah.
Through the cervix, the uterus, and finally into the fallopian tube, which is where fertilization usually takes place.
It's like a microscopic marathon. What helps them along the way?
Well, first they have to get through the cervical mucus, which is like a gatekeeper.
Mm-hmm. Its consistency actually changes throughout the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Around ovulation, when estrogen is high, the mucus becomes thinner, allowing sperm to pass through more easily.
So it's like the body is creating a welcome mat for the sperm at just the right time.
Exactly.
But even if they make it past that, they still have to reach the egg itself, right? And I'm guessing the egg isn't just sitting there waiting to be found.
You're right. The egg has its own defenses.
Okay.
It's surrounded by a layer of cells called the corona radiata and then a tough outer layer called the zona pellucida.
Right.
Sperm have to break through both of these to reach the egg's membrane.
How do they do that? Do they have some kind of secret weapon?
They do. It's called the acrosome, a little cap on the sperm's head filled with enzymes.
Oh.
When the sperm binds to the zona pellucida, it triggers the release of these enzymes, which help digest a path through.
It's like they have their own little drill. But what keeps multiple sperm from fertilizing the egg?
There's another brilliant mechanism for that. As soon as one sperm penetrates the egg, it triggers a wave of calcium ions across the egg's surface.
Wow.
This wave hardens the zona pellucida, preventing any other sperm from getting in.
So it's like a security system that immediately locks down once the first sperm gets in.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
It is pretty cool.
So we have this one sperm making it through, fusing with the egg.
Right.
And creating a zygote, the very first cell of a new human.
Yeah.
What happens next?
That zygote doesn't waste any time.
No.
It starts dividing as it travels down the fallopian tube.
Okay.
First becoming a solid ball of cells called a marula, then a hollow ball called a blastocyst.
So it's dividing and changing as it moves toward the uterus,
right,
preparing for implantation.
Exactly.
And I thought the corpus luteum was temporary.
Yeah.
Doesn't it need a signal to keep producing progesterone and supporting the early pregnancy?
It does. And that signal comes from the embryo itself.
Oh, wow.
It starts producing human chorionic gonadotropin, better known as HCG. HCG.
Hmm.
That's what home pregnancy tests detect, right?
Exactly.
What does it actually do?
It acts like LH rescuing the corpus luteum from breaking down.
Okay.
It essentially tells the corpus luteum, hey, we're here. Keep that progesterone coming.
Wow.
It's a pretty amazing handoff between the embryo and the mother's body.
So it's like the embryo is taking charge, making sure its own development continues, but eventually the placenta takes over.
Exactly. As the pregnancy progresses, the placenta develops and becomes the main endocrine organ.
Okay.
Taking over hormone production from the corpus luteum.
The placenta is incredible. It's more than just a baby bump.
Oh, yeah.
It provides nutrients, removes waste, and produces hormones.
It does it all.
It's like a lifeline between the mother and the fetus.
It's a true multitasker.
Yeah.
It also plays a crucial role in fetal development.
Oh.
Remember how we talked about testosterone being essential for male development?
Right.
Well, if the fetus is male, the placenta actually uses precursors from the fetus to produce testosterone. It's like a collaborative effort between the placenta and the developing baby.
That level of coordination is mind-blowing. And speaking of complex processes,
yeah,
we can't forget about childbirth.
Right.
It seems like such a powerful and maybe even a bit scary event.
It's definitely powerful. And it's a great example of a positive feedback loop in action.
Now, positive feedback loops can be dangerous, right?
They can be.
Like they can spiral out of control. But in this case, it's essential for making sure labor progresses and the baby is born.
You're exactly right. It's all about control and timing.
Yeah.
In childbirth, the positive feedback loop involves oxytocin, which stimulates uterine contractions.
Right.
As the baby's head pushes against the cervix, it triggers the release of even more oxytocin.
So the contractions get stronger and stronger, pushing the baby further down.
Exactly.
It's like a chain reaction.
Exactly. And once the baby is born, that pressure on the cervix is released, breaking the feedback loop. It's a perfect example of how our bodies use these powerful mechanisms in a safe and controlled way.
That's incredible. And then, of course, we have lactation.
Right.
Which is another whole chapter in this story.
It is.
The breasts go through so many changes during pregnancy to prepare for breastfeeding.
They do. It's another incredible example of hormonal orchestration.
Yeah.
Estrogen, progesterone, prolactin, and even HCG all play a role in getting those mammary glands ready to produce milk.
So it's another team effort.
It is.
But if milk is being produced during pregnancy.
Yeah.
Why doesn't it start flowing then?
That's because those high levels of estrogen and progesterone actually inhibit milk production.
Oh.
It's like a built-in delay mechanism, making sure milk is ready to go, but doesn't start flowing until the baby arrives.
So it's all perfectly timed. But once the baby is born, those hormone levels drop and milk production is triggered.
Right.
What actually causes the milk to be released?
Suckling. It triggers a reflex that leads to the release of oxytocin, which causes the muscles around the milk ducts to contract, squeezing the milk out. It's fascinating. The baby suckling not only gets them nourishment, but also stimulates more milk production.
It's like a natural supply and demand system.
Yeah.
And I've heard that a mother's emotional state can also influence milk production.
It's true. Prolactin, the key hormone for milk production, can be suppressed by stress and anxiety.
Wow.
It really highlights the mind-body connection when it comes to reproduction and motherhood.
It's amazing how interconnected everything is.
It is.
I have to say, this deep dive has been eye-opening. From those tiny sperm and eggs to the powerful hormones orchestrating everything.
Yeah.
The complexity and coordination of reproductive physiology are truly remarkable.
It is. And think about the millions of years of evolution that have shaped these systems.
Right.
It makes you wonder, why are there such distinct differences between the male and female systems? What evolutionary pressures led to these unique adaptations?
That's a fascinating question to ponder. This deep dive has definitely sparked my curiosity, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely. The more we learn, the more we realize how much more there is to discover.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, from the very beginning of development to the incredible processes of pregnancy, childbirth, and lactation.
It's a lot.
We've seen how hormones act as messengers, how different organs work together, and how even emotions can play a role.
It's quite a system.
It's like a symphony with all these different instruments playing in perfect harmony to create this beautiful and complex piece of music.
Beautifully put. And remember, this is just the beginning of your exploration. There's a whole world of knowledge out there waiting to be discovered.
So keep learning, keep asking questions, and keep marveling at the wonders of reproductive physiology.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.